Welcome to the Justified Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Justified City Primeval on FX. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 1, City Primeval, and Season 1, Episode 2, The Oklahoma Wild Man. Season 1 might be a misnomer. I think this is a limited series. But you never know. So, Aaron, first two episodes of this show, how are you feeling about it so far?
I really like it. I think that they did a smart job casting Boyd Holbrook as this Clement Mansell guy, because he's bringing a lot of that kind of like the Southern fried. I mean, I guess he's from Detroit, but he's clearly from the rural parts of Michigan.
He's the Oklahoma Wild Man.
And he's Oklahoma Wild Man. Yeah. So you've got that kind of like draw. I mean, it's I don't think he's exactly a Boyd Crowder, but he's right. He's in that category of antagonist, and he really pushes Raylan's buttons. I think it's interesting to see an older, little more cautious Raylan. At least for the first, for most of the episodes, he's kind of like running a gear, you know, and he's got his daughter there. Mm-hmm. But you know, we also saw a flash of the old Raylan. I think it's interesting that they did two of these episodes at once, because I think mm-hmm. that if they did the first one, there'd be a lot of people complaining about, like, why isn't Raylan doing cool shit or whatever. But, like, yeah, you get it's been a struggle to keep that stuff locked away. I like the supporting cast. You know, I thought that, God, who was the... Victor Williams, I guess, is the guy that plays Wendell Robinson.
Hmm. Okay, his partner in this case.
I like, you know, I like him a lot. I like I guess it's Marin Ireland that plays the Mo Downey, the other agent that's investigating. I find the two antagonists, the Clem and Sandy, I find very appealing, even though clearly this Clem guy is a really bad dude. Mm-hmm. And I'm very intrigued with what's going on between Sweetie and Carolyn. You know, like mm-hmm. They're effortlessly building this, like, the same kind of steeped history that they have in this one particular part of Detroit that I think that they did with Harlan. And that was one of my big questions, is what would this feel like? Mm-hmm. I have a few criticisms that we'll probably get into, but overall, like, this feels like I'm watching Justified again, and it feels like having an old friend stop by. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I'm very much enjoying it in that Justified mode that I did the original series. And it, in large part, I think, comes down to, obviously, Timothy Oliphant as Raylan and Boyd Holbrook as Clement. I think you need somebody who can measure up to Walton Goggins as Boyd Crowder in the original series. And I thought that was a very high bar to clear. I still think it's a high bar to clear.
Yeah.
Boyd Holbrook is doing it, man. I am instantly drawn to and yet repulsed by Clement Mansell. And that is what this show needs. If it needs anything, it needs Raylan Givens to be, you know, the badass, cool, calm, collected, and also very feisty at times guy. And then it needs a great villain opposite him. And I think they nailed that.
Yeah, you put a dry villain with not enough sauce against Raylan, and it just doesn't work. And yeah. I think they really got something here. This is mm-hmm. working, because like I said, like Boyd is one of the villains that, like, he's a terrible guy, but you're always kind of rooting for him to be better, because you could see a version of mm-hmm. him where he could be a guy like Raylan that could do good in the world, but he just could never get out of his own way, could never escape the kind of Harlan, his family. Mm-hmm. And, like, you feel the kind of same way about this guy, is, like, he seems like he's so much fun right up until he's not.
Mm-hmm.
And you see why Sandy likes him, see, like, Sweet, but you also see why they're terrified of him, too.
And he gets you to do things you don't want to do, right? I mean, Sandy's being manipulated by him just like a Boyd would manipulate everyone around him.
Remarkably well-realized villain in one episode. Like, yeah. From the introduction of him stealing the car, carjacking the deer hunter's car, to the insane shit that goes down with the judge, which that's another one. Like, I was really mm-hmm. kind of settling into Judge Guy here. I'm like, oh, there's another, like, a Judge,
yeah,
Judge
Keith
Reardon
David,
guy.
Man.
And Keith David is having maximum fun doing it. I'm like, this is exactly the kind of colorful character you need and things like Justified. Of course, mm-hmm. he doesn't make it through the two episodes, but it's, yeah, they haven't lost a touch. And then again, yeah. it makes a lot of sense because this is an Elmore Leonard novel, and these people feel like recognizably Elmore Leonard characters. Mm-hmm. They are fully realized. They are going to feel inhabited, and that's great.
Yeah, I'm with you. So far, so good. I am really enjoying the show. I think we should just get into talking about it because I do have a lot of stuff to say about these episodes, and there's a lot of stuff to cover.
One other thing I want to throw out there before we do is, like I just said, this is based on a book, Justified City Primeval. I'm sure a lot of people have read it. We are a show first podcast. We're not going to talk about book spoilers. So if people do have speculation or stuff informed, because I know this isn't a Raylan Givens novel. This is a novel that had a protagonectomy where they just deleted the hero and inserted, transplanted Raylan into the chest cavity of the novel. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you can probably, you know, there's a certain amount of mysteries and stuff this is setting up that you probably know enough to solve. So like, let's let us ignorant non-book readers sleuth that out. If you do have that City Primeval knowledge, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. There ain't nothing in life that ever comes for free. That's why we have an ad break.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Home is wherever the podcast takes me. Welcome back to the Justified Podcast. All right, we start off the show with Raylan in the Everglades, and he's with his daughter. They're driving apparently to camp. It seems like it's a little bit of punishment for his daughter because they talk about how she broke a girl's nose that might be why she's going to camp here. And then they run off the road by a truck, and the two guys in it try to jack Raylan, but, you know, that's a bad idea. They don't know what they've stepped in here. And I find that's true of, like, a lot of stuff that happens in these two episodes, and in Justified as a whole, is people get in over their heads unknowingly. These two guys did it. I think Clement will do it later, right? Like, he kills this judge not really knowing who the hell this guy is. He's just, that's what he does. But yeah, we'll get there.
It's another Elmore Leonard hallmark, these kind of like strange crossings of fate.
Yeah.
You know, these independent threads that kind of weave together. But I like that too. It's like that there's some of these people you can tell are not very good at crime. And just watching them like break against the cliffs of Rayland is always is always entertaining.
All right, my biggest question is, as far as characters go, is how much am I going to warm up to Rayland's daughter? Because I am not certain about this performance. She's supposed to be 15. We find out.
Yep.
She's Rayland's daughter, and I remember at the end of Justified, Raylan being very like soft with his daughter. I get the impression that Raylan has never said no to this girl.
Yes.
And she acts like it. She from the voice to the way she does not listen to him to the mannerisms, everything acts like a spoiled child. And it grates on me a little bit, but we'll see how it goes. I'm definitely warming up to her more as we get to know her more. And see her in more scenes, but boy, this first one was a little tough for me.
Yeah, I mean, Vivian Oliphant is Timothy's daughter, and I think she's fine. I think she takes direction well, because if she didn't, she'd be probably bad. Because the thing is she's green. I was reading an interview with Timothy Oliphant where he's talking about that, like, they didn't really try to push her. In fact, they didn't allow her to get into acting until she was an adult, so she didn't, you know, she did like some school productions in high school, and she got more into music kind of production and singing. But this is kind of like her first kind of real deal acting, and it shows. Like, this is like, I don't think she's any worse than like Orlando Bloom was in Lord of the Rings.
Sure,
he's kind of borderline awful in some of those scenes, but the kid, he's like 18 years old. That's like literally first movie roles to be flown around the world and be in the Lord of the Rings. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she takes direction well, and she does all right. But clearly, like, this, like, you know, when you got a show that had Caitlin Dever on it, as Loretta, was Loretta McCready, I can't remember her name, but like, this is not that is next level kid performance, and you're just not gonna do that. But I think a lot of people say it's like, oh, she's so spoiled, or oh, she doesn't listen, I can't believe Raylan raised someone so stupid. She's stubborn.
She's stupid. Yeah,
she's not stupid, and she's acting out and she's rebelling. And if you don't think that Raylan did the Harlan equivalent to this shit with his dad and mom and aunt, you're out of your fucking mind.
First and foremost, she's Raylan's daughter, right?
And that's like, I'm like, if you think Raylan stays where it put, with his dad would go off for days on end, like, you're out of your fucking mind. If you think Raylan is going to snap to anytime his dad says, you know, he's got an opportunity to the twist his dad's nuts into a bind and annoy him. I thought she, like, as written, she plays really well. And the people that I feel like the people that are complaining about it are going to have a rude awakening when they get teenagers, because it seems like they're under a theory that they can just, like, if you parent a certain way, that you can overcome all the genetic legacy and all the bullshit that you brought to the table, and your kids are going to be no, you're probably going to deal with miniature versions of you. So try to take that in psychologically. And the other thing is, like, it's very clear that despite the trajectory he was on at the end of Justified, that Raylan has been kind of a shitty dad. Like, and I think he's reaping that stuff too, because doesn't that read like he's just,
I,
like,
I don't know that I would call him a shitty dad. I would call him, he maybe gives her too much leash.
How often do you think he, I don't think, like, how often do you think he sees Willa? Because I don't think he sees her, like, every week, every other week even. It's more of, like, maybe summer vacation.
Good indication of that. I don't know. The way they leave it in the end of the series, he very much wants to be,
I know he wants to
her.
Be, but Raylan wants to be a good husband.
That wasn't true.
Raylan wants to be a good husband, a good marshal, a good dad, a
and
good
the stars just never align.
How but, often is he able to do those things?
Well, that's an open question, I think. I don't think I'm ready to say that he has not been there for her or
let me
been
say,
in her life.
What
in a
did Willa
way.
Mean when she says, "Why can't I just stay with you?" Because to me, this sets up a like, I'm staying primarily with my mom, and the only reason I'm seeing you is because my mom's on vacation and I got to go to this girls' school for wayward child, you know, beating up girls' youth. And I feel like that, why can't I stay with you is like, you know, why can't I be a bigger part in your life? And then she get they get rear-ended to demonstrate why it'd be a terrible idea for Raylan to have kids. Because that's Raylan's deal. Yeah. He either has to decide that he's going to take the big chair like Art, go to Glencoe to teach, or be a wild man chasing bad guys the rest of life. And he can't be a good dad, can't be a good husband that way. And I thought it was pretty obvious they're telling a story of Raylan not living up to the promises that he was making to people at the end of the final season. And I think that that's not what I wanted for Raylan, but it tracks. And it also makes a lot of sense of why his daughter is seen as like a spoiled brat, or why he feels like he can't say no, even though she's pushing him always, you know, like ordering, you know, all the food in the hotel just to kind of like get a rise out of him, you know, putting, you know, not doing the court decorum. Like she knows it's not right to laugh in a fucking federal court. But she does it anyway, because that's what Raylan would do when he was a kid. And his dad told him something was really important to be respectful of. So
maybe I missed something, but I'm not prepared to say that he has not been in her life in a significant way.
I'm not saying he's a deadbeat. I think he's paying child support and seeing her at holidays and birthdays. And so, I don't think he lives, like, they're not co-parenting anywhere near 50-50.
Okay. I'll respect that's your headcanon. I might have missed something because I was only able to watch these episodes once because, boy, they just kind of dropped two episodes seemingly out of nowhere. I never heard that this was going to be a two-episode premiere, so I did not have time to watch 4 hours of television.
But it's not one of those things where, like, we're hip-deep in the middle of Foundation Star Trek and, like...
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a lot on our plates, and so I apologize if I missed something, but I was only able to watch these episodes one time, and taking notes during that might have distracted me.
Okay. Well, I got the traditional multiple watches in, and that's the, and maybe you said the word headcanon, because, like, again, they haven't come out and said, you know, exactly what the parenting range, but these are just things I've inferred, and also, like, why Raylan and her have such an antagonistic, not an openly antagonistic, but an antagonistic parent, a parent to child relationship.
To me, it just felt like Raylan's trying to parent Raylan, and that's not a great recipe, right? Like,
right.
She, no matter how much time he spends with her, no matter how good of a father he is and present, she might just be a little Raylan, which is impossible to
But the thing is like, I don't think there's a way to effectively parent a child when they're 15 and you say, we're going to go on a road trip after you've had this, like, you know, after I failed to get you to the camp that you're supposed to go to as your last resort. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to get caught into the police shit that I always do. And you're going to be stuck here at a hotel in a strange city.
Like, yeah, there's an implication there. This is not I guess you could extrapolate and say maybe this is not the first time that's happened in 15 years. Right. Or in 10 years.
Or the fact that it's happening at all just sucks for, like, that 15 year old. I'm like, you know, imagine how sad this series would be if for, like, let's say this case takes 2 weeks. She just sits in a hotel room for 2 weeks and just stays there, never goes anywhere. Like, I would be worried about the child in the other direction. So, again, she's Raylan fucking Givens' daughter. The fact that she's not going to do what she's told and stay put is, I think, a given. I saw a lot of people hating Willa and the performance. And like I said, she's great.
It grew on me.
I don't think she's bad. And I think a lot of the kind of awkward teenage stuff works with, like, a slightly awkward performance.
Well, and a lot of this kind of annoying spoiled kid stuff is front loaded here, and then as we see her in subsequent scenes, we see that she's not just an annoying spoiled kid, she's also very street smart, she's also, like, very capable in her own right. But I think we're going to see more of that coming up.
True, but I also think we're probably fooling ourselves if we think that seeing her dad beat the piss out of a felon is going to scare her to some kind of obedient, submissive pliable version of herself, because again, that's not who she is. I will say the other thing is I think because she is Timothy Oliphant's daughter, I think she plays like a really good mix between Raylan and Wynonna. Like, I feel like that is a plausible human being that would have popped out of these two.
Yeah, I could see it.
Good cast. Yeah, good casting as
what she
daughter.
Got from her mother is she seems to like bad boys. There's a look on her face when she's looking at these dudes who are jacking their car or whatever they're trying to do to Raylan that makes me think she's kind of into this. She's like,
really?
More intrigued than scared. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, but I don't think it was into the bat. It's more of like being excited to see your dad in action.
Well, I guess the reason I read it as the bad boy stuff is because later she's taken in by Clement, who's just like chatting her up, and clearly he does not look like a dude who's all
straight-laced,
right?
But is she into it, or is like, because like she thinks that he is a Marshall buddy of his dad telling a bunch of old Marshall, and I think that's attractive to her, that like she wants to know more about her dad. And but I didn't get to like, oh god, I just love fucking danger.
I don't, with her walking through all the fucking abandoned warehouses and going down the streets scamming scammers, like I don't know, there's a darker element to her, I think, that we,
that's Raylan shit though,
that we see.
That's Raylan shit
for sure.
And then she's unsupervised. Anyway, she's unattended minor. What the fuck is she? She's going to get into trouble. That's why you attend them.
Indeed. All right. We go 37 miles outside of Detroit, and a guy pulls up to a gas pump, steals a car, and he drives to the city singing White Stripes. This is Clement. We'll come to know later. But good introduction for him. This will not be the last car that he steals by a long shot. He loves to steal cars. I think that's his thing. He loves cars, loves stealing. Two great flavors that go great together.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's very entitled. Like, he's, you know, and you find out more about why this is, but this guy feels like he just can't be caught. Mm-hmm. He'll never be brought. Like, he is a guy who is a young, fairly powerful person who just gets away with shit and has never been brought to account. So, like, mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a story of him getting maybe a little lazy and brazen. Like, this this is obviously, unless, I don't know, maybe Raylan gets shot and killed and the wild man makes it off into Oklahoma. All right. But I'm guessing he's about to meet his Waterloo.
Probably.
But you can see how like kind of like sloppy and impulsive that he's getting. And because he just feels like, he's untouchable.
Yeah. And that's a dangerous combination, right?
Yeah.
Then we go to Detroit, Michigan, where Keith David, Judge Guy, as we'll find out, tries to start his new electric car and it blows up in his driveway. I think, which is just a feature of electric cars, right? Are we sure this was a hit attempt?
He didn't pay his $1,000 non-exploding lease with Cadillac. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's where they get you.
I love electric cars.
In the future.
So apparently he's a judge in the Third Circuit Judicial Court, and he goes in for a case where he refuses to be scared off by racists with bombs, as he says. And Raylan's called to the stand over this arrest that he made in Florida. And it turns out that the offenders had warrants in Michigan, so that's where they're being tried. And they ask if he drove them straight to the courthouse. He didn't. And the defense kind of zeroes in on that inappropriate behavior. And he and his daughter both displays more inappropriate behavior in the courtroom. So the judge has the Florida charges dropped on these guys and sends Raylan and his daughter off with the bailiff to be arrested.
And that's like, this scene is my rebuttal to anyone that's like really hating Willa, because like, there's not a damn thing you can say about Willa that you couldn't say about Raylan in this scene. He's being stupid. He should know better. And he's doing it anyway. And it's not that he's dumb. It's just, he just can't abide. He can't sit back and listen to this judge say a bunch of stupid shit and, you know, call him a racist, and he's gonna say something about it. And like, she's Raylan's daughter.
The judge asks, are you gonna shut your mouth or am I gonna have to? And we know the answer to that before Raylan even turns to him, right?
And even like what he said about like, I wonder if the question on your mind is, are you surprised that someone made an attempt on your life or doesn't happen more often? That is not hard to interpret as a threat. That's some shit that you say to like some shit kicker in Harlan County, not to a federal fucking judge in his courtroom.
In his own courtroom.
And they do, Keith David does so much great characterization. Like, I love the way he cuts off his own bailiff. Like, his bailiff is in the All Rise, mm-hmm. honorable blah, and he's and he just gavels in the middle. Damn. He's like, oh, yup. I really like the montage of Detroit that they open the sequence with, where, like, you have the industrial center, and then you go to see, you start to see stuff decay, and then go to houses and, like, burnt out houses, and then you go to, like, slightly nicer areas, and then you get to the Stone Mansion, and you end up on Keith David's, like, fucking castle with, like, mm-hmm. And I get that federal judges do all right, but they're definitely starting to tell the story of this guy doing a little better than he should be doing.
Yeah, for sure.
That is an old stone mansion. That's an expensive house for a civil servant to be maintaining.
Mm-hmm. I forgot to mention it was a Cadillac that blew up in his driveway. That'll be semi-important later.
Shitty CGI on that, by the way. That was some fake ass.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's some rough explode, because obviously they're not blowing up a Cadillac for the show, but
yeah.
Yeah, the burnt out Cadillac is really, really like CG, you know, circa Toy Story 1 era.
Wow.
Modeling, yeah. It's bad.
So Raylan and his daughter are bounced from their cell by the chief of police in Detroit, and Raylan is introduced to Wendell Robinson, his new partner on a task force, to figure out who tried to kill Judge Keith David, Judge Guy. Raylan objects. He doesn't want to do this, but it's no use. And they're thinking, you crack the case in 24 hours and go home. No problem.
This detective Robinson, first name Wendell, I really mm-hmm. like him. Is this a Wire reference? Because I got such bunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Vibes
me too.
Off this guy, and he's played by Wendell Pierce.
Uh huh.
And there we have Wendell. I felt like there was more than a little nod to this character, to Bunk's character from The Wire in this guy's performance.
Could be. But yeah, I like him too. Not for any real reason yet. We haven't seen him do much of anything.
But he's giving those Tim Rachel vibes, where, like, he sees Raylan. He does not like Raylan, but he also sees the bullshit.
Uh-huh.
Like, he smells it a long way off, and, you know, is, like, not going to take him too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Then we go over to the car thief, Clement. He goes to the casino. He meets with the waitress, Sandy, convinces her to leave her job early to go bang. And they do it in the suite of some high roller Albanian named Del Weems.
So Del Weems is a... So she's got a bunch of scams she's running on dudes. Del Weems is a crypto Bitcoin millionaire.
Yeah.
The other guy, the Skinder guy, is the Albanian hot dog.
He's the
magnate.
Albanian. Okay, I thought
so
the Albanian
he, like,
the hot dog guy.
While Del is on is on business in Europe, she's staying mm-hmm. at his house, and she's working on the next mark.
Yeah. Right. They talk about the robbery that they plan to steal money from Skinder, this hot dog guy.
And they cast this Adelaide Clemens as Sandy Stanton. She's every bit the equal of Boyd Holbrook, where this girl could get away with so much because she's so fucking appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got this casino job where she's casing high rollers all the time and just rolling them high. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They're a lot of fun to watch, and I felt very sorry for her because she seems like, you know. Mo says about the judge's assistant that gets killed later that, you know, she's a good kid, made a few bad mistakes. I feel like, yeah, her meeting Clem was like the worst thing that ever happened to her.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that she's being manipulated by him left and right, and
but she's extremely likable despite doing mm-hmm. Catting around doing shitty stuff the whole episode.
I really love Clement kind of lamenting the death of the low tech robbery, I guess. Like, he talks about how he mugged a guy the other day, and the guy had no cash, asked if he could Venmo him the money. And it's like, yeah, people just don't carry cash anymore. How are you
going to
rob?
That's what my ass would do. It's like, I'll give you these credit cards, but they'll be canceled within 30 minutes of you letting me go, and I could Venmo you, I guess, but...
Yeah, I mean, aside from, like, taking someone to the ATM and saying, withdraw your shit, what are you going to do? But then you got to stick around the scene too long.
there's something really thematic about, you know, the fact that he is just delusional about his success, of like this guy butt naked staring out the floor to ceiling windows of a flat that he doesn't own, mm-hmm. and proclaiming himself king. You know, yeah. like, I'm the king of the fuck, but like, none of these accomplishments are yours. And if it wasn't for Sandy, it's an open
glory yeah. kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it just shows like his state of delusion at this part of the episode, that he thinks that he is on the cusp of something big. And he is.
Yeah. But his whole lifestyle is dying, right? Is the juxtaposition there.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's getting harder and harder to score the way that he used to.
Mm hmm. And then we go over to Armada, Michigan, which is rural.
This is where we get hit with the title card. I'm a little disappointed that we don't get a proper credit sequence in the new Justified. I don't know if we had to do the gangster grass. I always loved the Justified credits. I always particularly loved that song. And
mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah, it was kind of like we're just getting a 5-second little ditty. With the gritty logo now, huh?
It's the way things are going, man.
So looking forward to
Star Trek and Foundation are the holdouts right now.
Yeah, I feel like all they had to do is have Raylan walk the same path that Willow walks in episode 2, and there's your credit sequence. He's a gangsta grass back together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
anyway.
We're over in Armada, Michigan. It's very rural out there. The cops are surveilling this house that they got as a tip from the Wolverine militia, apparently. Some real douchebag of a cop seems like he's trying to show off in front of Raylan. This is how we do it in Detroit. So they move on the house, find a bunch of bomb-making shit. Raylan finds a trapdoor in the floor leading to a tunnel. And we'll kind of get to that here in a second. This guy sucks. I don't know if he's going to be a recurring character. I assume. Is that his name? Yeah. I just called him douche cop because that's what he is. He seems more concerned with looking tough than doing good work. And that's demonstrated by them coming up with the fucking ram to the front door about to blast it open. Raylan goes, hold on, leans over and just opens the unlocked door.
Yeah, and the guy's like, we'll show you how to get things done in Detroit, but you're not in Detroit, you're in Armada. You know?
Sure, sure.
I guess when I thought about like, what is Raylan going to look like in Detroit? You often forget that you can get to Harlan County from any U.S. city by just driving out of it for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you're definitely seeing, you know, these Wolverine militiamen, the Clems, like you're definitely getting that Harlan County feel. Even this location, yeah. like this felt exactly like him busting some, you know, meth house in Harlan, right?
Yeah, for sure. Right down to the tunnel they find, and he's just like, things that occur to you when you grow up in a mining town.
Such a funny nice. Reading. And they also set this Brill. It's like, because Raylan's clearly in charge. It's the whole reason he's here. And the cops come up, say, who's in charge? And Brill, they both say, I am. And then Raylan, mm-hmm. who hates being in charge, is like, sure, buddy. Yeah, you're in charge. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're showing things how you get things done in Detroit. And, you know, you can when you're in the country, you can do things a little bit differently. But this guy's just too much.
Yeah. Real piece of shit.
Did we get to the dog scene? The fucking...
We're about to, yeah.
Okay.
Cops go into the tunnel. Two guys see him coming and make a run for it on their dirt bikes. One of the bikes breaks down and the cops catch that guy. The other one gets away, and the one that they do catch says it's personal with the attempted murder of the judge.
Yeah, it sure is. How you feel about police dogs?
I don't like them. They're kind of non-lethal. I mean, they are non-lethal, but they're very painful and intentionally so. I mean, especially the way this guy uses them, the only reason he sticks this dog on him is to cause this guy pain.
No, they feel like terror weapons, and I don't understand why. Because like if they're not chewing on some dude's leg that may or may not deserve it, but I don't know if, you know, the whole point is to let people make those decisions in the field. But also like when they're just sniffing, they're violating their rights and doing. But so I'm not as soon as I saw this guy so excited, like. to get this dog up this guy that they've treed who, you know, like, what the hell is he going to do? He's up a tree.
Yeah. Like, no, you caught him already. He's all but in cuffs.
You're torturing information out of him. Like, this guy brags about it. Like, this guy's just a shit cop. Uh-huh. And God, I hope he reaps some kind of consequence for the all the shit that he's sowing.
Mm-hmm. So the defense attorney that we saw earlier when Raylan was in the courtroom, named Carolyn, goes to a bar where she meets
Wilder.
Carolyn Wilder. She goes to a bar where she meets with Jamal, which I get is like a former partner slash maybe romantic interest. I think it's
explicitly her ex-husband because she's paying him alimony. Yeah. Alimony.
Yeah. He talks about what he lost, seemingly for committing fraud. And he tries to get money out of her by threatening her with what they might find out about her if the creditors start digging around into his finances. And then he leaves, and Marcus, the bartender, who we're going to call Sweetie from now on, gives her some money in payment for helping Tyrone, which was the kid who got arrested in Florida for trying to jack Raylan's car. And then they get a call.
Yeah, and their relationship here is like he's apparently watched over her for a lifetime, so he's been some kind of guardian that she feels like she owes. Mm-hmm. And this is like these are the entanglements to pay attention to.
They're starting to paint a picture of who this person is. She's a defense attorney. She cares about her clients, but she's also wrapped up in some shit that she might rather not be.
So here's the, I think, is the backstory, which we'll see if I'm right or not. But it feels like her and her husband were both very community involved, kind of crusading, lawyers, giving back to the community. And somehow he defrauded the community at large, probably stealing from some kind of, not-for-profit that they set up or some kind of charity. And from her particularly... And has so encumbered her that she's had to do some dirty shit to kind of keep one step ahead of the creditor. Or maybe to do the good that they got in bed with the wrong people. But somehow this has got to connect to the corruption of Judge Guy at some point.
I was going to say maybe there were some payments made to Judge Guy on some important cases.
It's like Judge Guy is the guy keeping track of it. But like he's got a fucking ledger going.
He's taking a lot of payments.
But I think that, I wonder like what point part her ex-husband will play, because it seems like they're positioning him like Winona's ex-husband, the real estate agent who is like this, like, you know, couldn't we leave, he's successful, but couldn't leave well enough alone and got some financing from shady places and just continually entangled her and embroiled her in more and more shit, because now he's essentially shaking her down, you know? Like, if you don't help me out with my debts, then they're going to start poking around her finances and...
Yeah, when he's wearing Gucci shoes, right?
Right.
Clearly, but I feel like this guy's going to be spending all this on his debt.
Yeah, I feel like this guy's going to have Clem's gun held to his temple by episode 6 or so, and it's going to cause a giant shitstorm, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We got to get out of this town alive. We'll be right back. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Mm-hmm. madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. Poured me a fresh shot of bourbon. We're back with more Justified.
Then Raylan asked Judge Guy a couple questions about his case. Apparently, he was fucking the mother of one of the defendants, and they're concerned about it, but they want information on her mostly.
What's it gonna do? She was eyeing me like Wagyu beef.
Right.
I gave her son to Max. She still wanted a piece. You know what? Fair point.
I'm but a man. Like, what do you want?
The jury, addressing the jury. I did my job as a civil student. I didn't let my heart be influenced, but the ass was fat, and I had to tap. I can respect that.
And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with it.
I respect a guy openly being a horn dog. But I do think that there probably is, you know, we might not find anything wrong with it, but I bet the Michigan State Bar might say something about the seeming impropriety that you could accuse a person of there.
Potentially. I mean, he did wait until the case was over and done with.
And he did give that boy the max.
Yeah, you can't say he went easy on the kid.
You can't say when he's going to mom either. But as she said, she enjoyed every second because Pete David, that fucking smooth. Then when they start asking him questions about his dirty business, that's when he pulls out this leather-bound ledger that we can't. It's got initials, phone numbers at the top of each page, initials, dates, and transaction amounts. And I don't know whether these are bribes. This is a book, you know, like it seems like a lame if this is a gambling thing he's running, but they keep on involving the casino. So maybe, but it feels more probably bribes and kickbacks.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm curious if there's any connection between any of the other characters we've seen so far. Cause like the one thing they're doing that worked really well in Harlan that I'm not sure works nearly as well in Detroit is making it feel like a very small town where everybody knows each other. Like they have a couple of times where like Raylan will show up in the same place, restaurant or whatever, as Carolyn, just kind of out of the blue. And that's like, there's so many restaurants in Detroit, it's a question of whether that would happen. And then the judge shows up at the casino, at Sandy's casino, where there just happens to be this investigation. It seems like a little small world to me. But that might be a thing they're doing because everybody is connected.
But I also think they're hinting that this is all taking place in one particular neighborhood or like district of Detroit, which I don't think they're. Well, I agree. They're not communicating that very well. But like, I think you're supposed to understand that there is. And all these people have like some kind of personal connection too. Like no one's more than one degree of separation. Like the judge knows Sandy because Carolyn Wilder. Like there's the one. So like the fact that they're all kind of in an orbit doesn't stretch my.
There's no neighborhood you could pin this to with the different with the class distinctions between these people, the social distance between all of them. Like, you've got lawyers and criminals and casino waitresses and just, like,
but
such
disparate
stratas of society that I don't think they would all show up in the same places at the same time.
But would it shock you to find out that, like, Keith, the judge guy ran around with Sweetie? back in their youth, and they like grew up in the same neighborhood.
This is what I mean. Judge guy, this is set up.
They'll keep on weaving those connections together. Because that's I think there is a few things that kind of bothered me, and some lawman leaps that Raylan made that I'm like, I'm not sure exactly how they got to here from there. But I think that as the show goes on, those things will kind of smooth out. Because one of the joys of watching the original Justified is like that we as the audience knew things. But Raylan didn't know things, like the cops didn't know things, and like sometimes the cops didn't know things the bad guys didn't know about, and like there was this all this confusion, this game of telephone being played, and as the audience member you see both sides and you're like, oh, so like some of this I think is just Justified being Justified.
I'm gonna give it some time and see if they connect some dots that look like they might be there to connect, but I'm not sure. All right, Clement goes to Marcus's bar, to Sweetie's, where he's getting Sandy some weed. He's palling around with his old friend. I guess they're music buddies. And he goes in the bathroom, pulls a gun out of the drop ceiling, and then they leave. And in the car, he shows Sandy the gun and says they might need it when they rob the Albanian.
So I thought there's an interesting mystery here where, like, Clem is obsessed with tapes. He's talking about demos and whatever. And Sandy mentioned kind of petulantly, like, he never lets me listen to them. I wonder if these tapes that he calls his demos, if he actually has a vast collection of like some kind of recorded officials taking bribes. Because in that flashback scene, when he tells Sweetie, it's like, you don't want me sitting in jail too long because who knows what I'll start talking about. I don't know how, because nothing about this guy's character would make me think that he would have these kind of high profile connections. But maybe he got lucky. But there's something about his shtick of listening to tapes. And like people like, what are on the tapes? And no, that's I think these are some Chekhov, just some Chekhov tapery going
could
on
be.
Here.
Could be. I mean, the specific instance that you mentioned is easily covered over by saying, well, they showed us the flashback at the beginning of next episode, I think, where they committed a crime together, him and Sweetie. So he could talk about that pretty obviously. But you might be right. There might be something more to it.
Yeah, I definitely, like, you know, why would a high-profile lawyer swing into action?
Yeah.
Because, like, and how does Sweetie, I guess Sweetie has
a favorite.
Well,
she wants to protect Sweetie, right?
Like,
right. Yeah, Carolyn and Sweetie have a relationship, so she might take him as a client.
Yeah, if I misinterpret that and he's just threatening Sweetie, but I thought he was threatening larger powers.
He might be.
And that was understood. But, yeah, you're right. It's a plain reading. I'm just threatening, unless you want to go down for this, too. This quadruple homicide, then... Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, we'll see. The guy who bombed the judge's car goes to his mother's for dinner. Is this the other guy that was in the tunnel?
This is the guy that made that actually escaped.
Okay, I wasn't certain of that. I didn't go back and look at him.
I got the big beard shit heel and the little beard shit, little bearded shit heel. Okay. That's the one that got fed to the dogs. This is the big bearded shit heel, and he's visiting his mom. The woman that wanted a piece of the judge.
This is what the judge was getting down. Okay, all right.
I can see it. This is obviously years ago too. Don't forget that.
That's fair.
And do you see it? The woman cooks a mean fucking pot roast too.
I don't
obviously.
Think that's the. I think
every
it was
federal
the
agent in that
roast
house
he was interested in.
Hey, that's they're both. No, okay.
Nope. All right.
Let's just keep moving on.
So it becomes apparent that his mother has arranged for the cops to grab him here. And when they show up, he takes his mom hostage and goes down to the basement with her. Raylan manages to talk this guy out of the basement, but douche cop kicks him down the stairs. That's how we do things in Detroit.
But why?
Is it how you should do things in Detroit? Or is it just how you, as a dickhead, do things in Detroit?
Yeah, it's one of those constantly escalations on both sides of the law and against the law. And, you know, there's a whole lot of resigned to, like, you know, shit that happens in police. But, like, I don't know. I don't know where
this
we
is the
ever...
second time, though. We've seen the person all but in cuffs, and this guy goes and does something shitty.
Right, because they're... they're convinced that this guy, and I think they're right, like, this guy tried to blow up a federal judge. He seems like he's a real piece of shit. And he de- you know, he deserves some kind of the punishment from society, I guess, if you want to see the whole prison system as purely punitive. But yeah, you just wish that, like, the cops could be professional, like, all the time. You know, like, what if you could, if you're, like, you know, twice as much as they are now, like, if you could keep that momentum going for 5 or 10 years, what would that do to society? Some people think probably society be burning in flames. I don't know. But I don't know. Like I said, you can go back and listen to our Who Owns the City, or We Own the City, from last year. If you want to. This isn't that show. You know, this isn't the show talking about how fucked up things. But I think it's interesting because Raylan himself is looking at this guy like. We start this episode with Raylan Givens getting on hot water for potentially racially tinged ways to look at his zealous police work. But even Raylan, who's comfortable with using violence to contain people who are not, you know, complying and whatnot, is kind of pale, you know, kind of paled by what this guy's doing, just how unnecessary it is.
And that's the thing. Those people aren't complying with Raylan, and so he kind of has to resort to this stuff, whereas this guy has compliant criminals ready to be handcuffed, all but holding out their wrists.
You get the feeling that Brill would like to shoot this guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just to prove how tough he is.
It's funny, though, because we just did our badass rank. We're doing our badass podcast, and what we're ranking all these badasses about how charismatic they are. We just got to Timothy Oliphant yesterday. We gave him a perfect score, a perfect one score on his charisma rating. And like scenes like this are why he's just so good. And when he leans into Carolyn later and he's like, tell me, are you following me? Like the shit that he gets away with and how beautifully he de-escalates this thing. Yeah. And it just gets ruined by this guy kicking the door in, because I did get the clear thought that he wanted to kill this guy. Mm-hmm. But I really like what he said about, you know, there's all these agents up here that, especially the ones standing by the toaster oven, very hungry and very irritable.
Ridiculous.
She got the whole spread. You know how good this house smells?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Oh, my God. Pot roast, a fresh baked bread. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it's dinner time. These guys are still working?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Raylan and his daughter have dinner at a restaurant. He suggests a couple routes back to Florida, because the case is basically over, right? They caught the guy. She says she wants to go through Harlan, which is interesting. And Carolyn Wilder, the defense attorney, is in the same restaurant negotiating plea deals with the prosecutor. She notices Raylan staring, and his daughter orders him a really silly drink, so they get up and leave.
The dumbest drink on the menu. And that's the, oh God, because it's funny, they're doing kind of a will they won't they between Carolyn and Raylan here. And you know, she's talking to her prosecutor friend, and they start talking about him and Yellowstone, and she's like, I'd fuck the shit out of Kevin Costner. It's like,
why?
And then Will is saying the same thing, like, hey, you need a woman in your life. That she seems like nice. It'd be an interesting pairing, but also like I feel like she is being armbarred into this bullshit, and there's a little bit of Ava Crowder to that.
Yeah,
like this is a basically decent person who's getting fucked over into a life of crime, and historically that's someone that Raylan wants to kind of try to wade in and rescue. So I could see it.
Yeah, he's got a soft spot for those people, and we'll see just you know how in over her head she is. How much power she can wield, because she is also like a very powerful person.
She's powerful, smart, sophisticated, but against criminally deranged, that only gets you so far.
True. What is it about Kevin Costner? I don't understand it.
He's a good looking man. That's where it starts and stops. I'm convinced.
Is he? His powers of seduction are completely lost on me. I don't see it. I really don't see it.
What if he came at you with a shitty fake Boston accent?
Sure. Or a shitty what if he fake came at, Southern accent?
What if he came at you with a shitty fake English accent? Like, okay. Because, you know, like there's the many sides of Kevin Costner, the many faces.
He's only got the one face and it's not that compelling. In my opinion. Anyway, we go back to
Jim Jones came for Liv Tyler last week. Kevin Costner this week. What attractive Hollywood person will Jim be mystified by their appeal next? Tune in next week.
There are still a few.
Bald move.
I'm not out of them. I can tell you that much.
Wouldn't surprise me.
So Sandy butters up the hot dog man at the casino, and they leave with Clement following in his car. He gets stuck behind the judge in the parking garage, and they get some road rage shit going on. And Clement runs him off the road, destroys his Cadillac, then shoots him dead. And then he searches his body, for cash. He finds this notebook instead, and he tells the judge's assistant to take him to her boyfriend's house, which he thinks that that was her boyfriend, that the judge was her boyfriend.
The judge might have thought that.
Yeah, he probably did. But boy, he just stepped in it, huh? Got in way over his head here. Had no idea who this was or the scenarios behind it. It's just dumb bad luck.
And poor Sandy, she's with this dude that she's supposed to seduce, and he just gets a different thing to do and just fucks off the rest of the night.
Yeah, and she's just because of a road rage with something she'd never planned to, right?
Yeah. There's a couple of interesting things I want to talk about. Number one, you've played blackjack.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever played a face-down game of blackjack?
Not for money.
Dealer dealt these out hands down, and he looks like, I feel like the script said blackjack, but the director thought poker. But that made no fucking sense. That and also, like, yeah, like, nothing made that sense. Like you'd split on two aces, surely.
Yeah, you always
you
split.
Wouldn't be dealt them face down. You wouldn't be keeping them from the dealer. What the fuck? Like, I don't know. That's an interesting call.
Yeah, I was trying to read into his play style, because that is a clearly wrong move. You never hit two aces. You would split those every single time.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're trying to say something about his level of sophistication when it comes to crime. I mean, everything
but
else
he's also
says
distracted
that
watching his girlfriend to seduce this other dude, but also I don't think he really cared. So I'm not sure exactly where they're going with that either. But I really like the thing with the judge where, like, you have this, like, the judge starts off thinking he's in control. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to lure this guy into this downtown where he's going to have all these penalties, and I'm going to call. And then you see where he starts getting actually scared. And that's just where Boyd starts. It's a real tragedy.
Then we go to Clement, and I don't know this woman's name. It's the assistant of judge.
I never learned her name either. Yeah.
They're driving back to the judge's house. They stop at a red light, and she makes a run for it, and Clement runs after her and kills her in a park. And I like here this detail. He's making some pretty big assumptions about this black guy, right? Oh, was he into drugs, numbers? You know, he's thinking, oh, he got this guy's number. He has no idea this is a judge. And that he has just walked through a door he should not have opened.
It's been 30 years in this racist ass town and shit like this. You assume a black man got money and nice cars into drugs.
Right.
I like that. So that's the thing about Clem is, like, he was so likable right up until, honestly, even killing Keith David, like, I was like, okay.
It's, you know, he cut him off.
There's some fuck around finding out, and Keith David clearly, like, Raylan said, maybe he's a good man, maybe he's not. But, yeah, killing this assistant, and then you find out that she's there because she was trying to cooperate with law enforcement for probably some bullshit shoplifting, minor drug possession charge or something, and it's, like, fucking tragic.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, the Clem's motivation, this speech he gives about the Barbara Mandrell's mansion and him living, wanting to live in a big house all his life, and then realizing the more he thought about it, what the fuck is a man going to do with 12 bathrooms? Which is kind of how I've always viewed the wealth. Mm-hmm. Like, why the fuck would you ever live in a mansion with, like, tennis courts and shit in it? Like, come on.
Yeah.
But what is he doing this for? Is he, like, a Joker type? That he doesn't want to own anything. He just likes the thrill of the chase and ripping people off, because it seems like his whole thing is, like, if I ever got this level of success, I don't know what I would do with it. So why is he chasing it? Why does he want to be the king? What does being the king mean to him? Is he some crazy asshole?
Good questions. He might be a crazy asshole. He might be a guy who feels like he never could attain it, so that's not really a possible reality in his mind. So he feels like the underdog in his own mind, right? Like he's the guy who's getting shit on, so he's gonna, you know, go out and hurt people and try and get his wherever he can, but he'll never attain the status of the people he's stealing stuff from.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because he steals from everybody, as we'll see here in the next episode.
It's opportunistic, yeah. Just to do it.
So Raylan's called about the killing of the judge, and he goes to the scene, and the cops wonder what the hell they missed, because they thought they got the guy who wanted to kill the judge. They find the assistant's body in the park, and we find out that she was investigating Judge Guy as a CI. And of course, this means Raylan is sucked back into the case. He goes back to his hotel where his daughter is sleeping and just kind of sits. Yeah, they didn't miss anything, man. Just wrong place, wrong guy, wrong time.
It seems like the last scene is him just like finally coming to grips with like, my plans with my daughter are over. Like, yeah. I'm being called to do the thing that I do, and fuck. And and maybe a little bit of like seeing his daughter in the assistant, the kind of like, okay. You know, like the why innocent. You would be motivated to do something like this. You know, why you would just like bounce on your daughter.
Yeah, I don't know. But that's the end of episode one. Kind of leave it there. And then we're coming back in episode two in Detroit in 2017. And the whole series takes place in the present day. So this is 6 years earlier. Sweetie and Marcus and his buddies are sitting around smoking. Clement shows up to rob him. And they seem to not have much cash or drugs on him, but Clement thinks there's more. It's revealed that Sweetie's working with him, and then Clement kills everybody else in the room, getting all the drugs and cash in the house, and they take Sweetie's car back to the city where Clement drops him off. This is like the third car he's stolen so far. Two in the first episode with Dell and the gas station thing, and then he just steals Sweetie's car here. Drops him in an alley, and he's gone.
What doesn't steal Sweetie's car? He tells Sweetie he needs to pick up his car.
Like I think they start to drive away with the car that Clement arrived in, which is almost certainly stolen.
Yes.
And then he goes, you drove here, right? You don't want to leave your car. And they drive back in Clement's car, and Sweetie's car, and he just drops Sweetie on the side of the road.
Wait, but he was in Clement. They were in Clement's car.
Uh-huh.
He
but
dropped
Clement
Sweetie
left the
off.
Car there because I think it's stolen.
What do you mean? Clement drove... Wait, he got into a different car?
I'm pretty sure what happens is Clement drives a car out there that is stolen.
Yeah, and he goes in a house, kills a bunch of people,
and drive away in Sweetie's car.
What? No. I think he drove away in his car, and Sweetie, who also drove there separately because he's going to smoke up with his buddies, has a car
then
there
why
that they
is,
don't want to leave at the murder scene.
Then why is Sweetie... So they drive away both cars?
Yes, you'd have to.
Then why is Sweetie dropped off in an alley at the end of the scene?
Because I don't
the
think
driver
they're like
who drives
a,
away
block,
in a car.
I think they're like a block away from the house at most at this point. Is how what I thought was happening?
Huh. Okay. Yeah. Maybe I don't know exactly what's happening there. I just assumed he stole every car he's in.
I know. I think
we
you're right.
Seen him in a non-stolen
he definitely
car.
Stole his car, but I think that he's like there's nothing nefarious about. I think the one thing I think you're supposed to understand is like. The way you feel used when you're with Clint because this guy, you know, clearly the plan was not to execute all these people, but he did it. And now it's like, yeah, okay, maybe we robbed these guys, but I didn't want to like fucking murder them. And then like, he's like, he kills his guys cause he's greedy. But then he tries to explain to guys like, oh, they wanted me to kill you, but I would never kill you cause you're this famous bass man. Let's go celebrate. And then as they're like, then Clem's like, yeah, but I don't really want to hang out with Sweetie the rest of the night. And he thinks up the like, oh, you got to go get your car. I think you're supposed to understand that like Sweetie's not going to see this guy again until he calls
it's
him
possible.
3 days later. They use him again. Yeah. And so that's what I got because like I'm trying to find the commonalities in how Sandy's feeling versus how, you know, Sweetie's feeling versus how Carolyn is going to eventually feel about this guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused as to like what the actual plan was here because like Sweetie definitely isn't planning on killing these guys, but he is planning on robbing them. I think the idea here is he and Clement aren't going to be connected at all. It's just going to be, I'm smoking with my buddies, and then boom, here comes this crazy dude, robs us all.
We all got
ruined
because he took a big old fat roll off of Sweetie, too, to make it look like...
meet up later and get my share.
And then Clem,
but he drops his name accidentally. He calls him Sweetie.
It's not accidentally. It was on purpose. Like Clem was
on purpose.
Was pissed that Sweetie tried to put the brakes on the operation and burnt him intentionally, so his buddies,
really?
That he would, oh yeah, it was malicious. When he goes like,
I thought
yeah,
it was showing
up.
That he was sloppy, but yeah, if that's the case, then it's showing that he is more vindictive and hot-headed.
Yeah, like I don't want anyone me calling the shots and how you know.
Okay.
And it's also put in a position now that's like he's also telling Sweetie, you just signed these guys, like maybe making him feel guilty because obviously they got to kill him now.
Yeah. Otherwise, oh, you robbed us. We're coming to get you, motherfucker.
Right. Like, right. Yeah. Right.
So 3 days later, Clement calls up Sweetie and asks if the cops have been asking about him. They haven't, but the cops show up at the motel he's staying in and arrest him. And then Carolyn Wilder is apparently his lawyer.
Yeah, we're talking about this kind of veiled threat that's, you know, we're not sure exactly how to interpret it about, you know, who knows what I might start saying if I'm spending too much time. They also made sure that we saw that there's a guy still breathing in that house, which will come into play later on in the episode. So,
yeah. He's a little sloppy there too, right? He doesn't finish the job. I want to know where you find scumbag motels like this. I've been to scumbag motels. I've been to a highway side Hojo and a Super 8 and all kinds of shitty motels. I've never seen one that looks this cool.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I was thinking of this it's funny you said Howard Johnson in McDonough, Georgia. Holy shit. Okay. Holy shit. I rolled out of place at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking like, God, I just got past Georgia. This is the halfway point to get to where I'm going in Florida. I should have pulled a couple more exits on because that place was bad.
This one looks cool, though. I like the red and the kind of maroon motif here with all the cool wallpaper.
Well,
and
so
it's
was
got
this,
a style, whereas most motels don't.
So was this like one of those shitty rundown motels, or is this one of those like romantic like
motel.
The Sybaris, you remember that in Indianapolis
sure.
where you could
yeah.
those things always look like shit on the outside, but on the inside they still look like shit, but they're shit that looks like a cave.
They're
or,
themed
I don't
shit.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're themed. But this felt like it was like yeah, you're right. It's like
a gothic vampire type experience.
But with neon animal striped wallpaper and Yeah. Yeah, it definitely looked done up. But so it's either like just so tacky and shitty and run down, or it's like one of these weird. Because the thing is, he was there to celebrate, right? It's 3 days later. He's got a piss pot full of money. He's got his girl.
Yeah, he's splurging.
He's treating her to to sex hotel. I don't know.
Jizz field jacuzzi. I don't know.
The jizz koozie. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't like that.
You're listening to the Justified Podcast. We'll be right back.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Can Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Howdy, Deputy. We're back with the Justified Podcast. All right, let's go to the present day. Let's get out of that grimy 3 days
Not
later.
Not enough chlorine in the world.
No. Raylan gets everything on room service, the room service menu, courtesy of his daughter. He leaves Willa alone in the hotel with parental orders not to leave the grounds. Mm-hmm. She turns on the TV and sees the news report about Judge Guy's killing.
But this is here, Raylan, like you said, you can't say no to her because this is a dynamic that sometimes shitty parents get trapped into where they feel so bad about the shitty things they're doing to their kid that like they try to make it up by being super lenient and not a great combination. Doesn't seem
and the
like.
Kid takes advantage of it, does more shitty things. And yeah, it's a cycle. And, you know, she tries. To her credit, she spends a lot more time, I think, in this hotel room than I would have expected.
Yeah. I think she complied for about a day.
Yeah. Which is good for her. I don't know. That seemed like showing a remarkable amount of restraint, but Raylan got swept up in the case. So Sandy shows back up at Clement's room, pissed because she had to spend the night with their Mark. Clement implies that he knows something about the killing, and she says, "Don't tell me anymore. I don't want to know." And then Raylan and his partner call up to the room to speak with Mr. Weems, guy whose room they're staying in, and want to talk with him. Yeah, and this is where you get the impression, again, you know, reinforcement that Sandy is just a passenger on the Clement show, you know, the Clement ride.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to do whatever the hell he wants to do, consequences to her be damned, and honestly to himself.
Just, yeah, just using her. How did Raylan and Wendell track this down? Because, like, I got the... when they were... when the Detective Brill was shouting about beating down the doors and finding witnesses and all that, since he's such a shit cop, I got the impression that this is a... like, the way Raylan was looking, like, this is a futile thing. Like, we're going to beat the doors at 4 o'clock in the morning, and people are going to, like, come out and give us actual intel. Like, did someone really get the license plate so they could look this up? Because it's not just an SUV match like that. There's no fucking way they'd have enough to knock on this guy's door the next morning. I felt like, and this happened in Justified a couple of times before, where like I didn't quite understand the police work that got them to this next step.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know the connection.
But it could be I misinterpreted that, and that's like, yeah, they did knock down, and you know they were in a nice neighborhood because it was on the way to the judge's house or is on downtown, and maybe people would have taken a note of that, but little bit suspension of disbelief stretching that they made this connection so fast.
Yeah, I agree. But here we are. So Raylan and Wendell ask Sandy some questions while Clement is in the other room, kind of imagining killing them. And they ask if she drove Dell's car last night. She says, no, but it might have been stolen and had an accident where I scraped the left fender. She goes into the room to get the other keys. And that's when Wendell sort of recognizes her name. And then they ask if she's seen Clement Mansell lately. And that's when she invites them to leave. And Raylan gives her his card.
This is the worst. Look, I just feel like, yeah, like if you're going to cooperate with the cops, cooperate with the cops. If you're going to stonewall them, stonewall. But like people doing this half-assed. You're not being fair. Shouldn't
you
tell me what
this is?
until then, yeah, like it's yeah. And then what's funny is like you know, I was pretty sure that Raylan knew that there was stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But like later on when he goes to Clem and is like, if you wanted to see my hat, you could just come out from Weem's bedroom, buddy, this morning. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, they know exactly, but like they also know that they don't have probable cause. They don't have a search warrant. So even if they would just fuck up their case. So he's just content to let them play their games at this point.
Mm-hmm. I love the way that Raylan plays his intelligence on his sleeve like that. He mm-hmm. is a very good detective as well. Because, you know, it's kind of tipping his hand a little bit to tell a criminal that he knows about their movements, but also it kind of doesn't matter if he tells them because he's just that good, right?
Yeah, but I don't know. Like I said, Raylan does stupid shit because he's Raylan.
Occasionally,
but it's cool,
yeah.
So we got to roll with it.
You know something that isn't very cool? Tidy whities. And yeah. I don't care how many tattoos, how many necklaces, how many Hawaiian shirts you're going to strap onto a guy wearing tidy whities. They're just not cool.
Not cool, but I regret to inform you that they do not make him look uncool. They're not quite.
They're the least
enough.
Cool part of him in any given scene,
go.
Though, right?
There you
like,
go.
He, imagine if he wasn't wearing tidy whities. If he was wearing. I don't know. Even a thong would look cooler yeah. than tidy whities.
I don't know. Sometimes these incredibly charismatic, good-looking fuckboy types can do things like wear Crocs and tidy whities and still pull because they're just ridiculously attractive and charming.
Yeah. No, I don't think it harms his ability to pull, but I don't know. It's not a good look, man. So after they leave, Clement asks some questions about Raylan. Sandy says he was polite and cute, and then he asks her a favor and hands her his gun. She says he had dewy skin, which he moisturizes? Is that what she means?
I don't know, because like, look, we've talked a lot about how good looking Timothy Oliphant is. Great hair.
Sure.
I will say he's got good skin. Sure. I wouldn't say dewy.
I don't know what dewy, I mean, slightly
dewy's
wet.
Dewy's like that, like, super young, moist
mm-hmm.
looking skin, not a pore to be seen. Like, it's like shiny, but not oily.
General, movie stars have that, but.
Not when you're the Raylan, not when you're Timothy's age. Like, he's an extremely good looking man, aging like fine wine. But Dewey was a reach. That they should have gone back to the thesaurus, I think.
I think there was something Dewey there, but it was not Raylan.
Right.
If you know what I mean. Anyway, here's the other question.
Yeah.
At the end of the scene, he says, when you get back from your trip, you can have your medicine. And I think the medicine he's talking about is weed.
No, it's his penis. It's 100% his penis.
That would make a hell of a lot more sense than weed.
Because he says, you know, what you really, he goes, oh, you know, because she says, I need to smoke, is what you need is Dr. Manziel's special treatment. And then he like grinds up and he's like, yo, never fails, never the blah, blah, blah. And then she thinks it's his erection and she reaches back and it says gun. And then he teases her saying, like, you can have your medicine when you get back. And, like, yeah, I think he's just fucked her silly. She's like, it's not as happy. You don't see the female version of the simp as often as the male version of the simp because of a lot of complicated cultural, social, biological reasons. But you do see it occasionally. I've seen it in my, like, I've seen things happen where, like, where women just cannot fucking say no to these guys. And apparently Clem's got it.
The reason I thought it was weed is because earlier she was saying she's almost out of dope.
And she was
talking about weed. And
so
they went to
Sweeties
and she wanted to get high. They went to Sweeties to get the weed. Why is any of this an issue? Why are they going to Sweetie to get weed? Is it just so Clement can see him and taunt him and because this is Michigan.
You're right. Michigan, where you can, like, everything they said about Michigan is actually true. It's fully recreational. Sweetie,
He's literally sitting in the bar smoking a joint in front of marshals and cops. It's recreational there. It's like getting a beer.
Dirt cheap. Secretly, Michigan's got the best weed, cheapest weed in the whole fucking can. I've smoked it all over the country. That's Michigan's where it's at, baby.
But I thought he had some hold on her based on getting her this weed, but certainly
fuck
not,
no.
Right?
No. Okay. I think it's more of like every time they stop the sweeties for weed, it's a pretext. Like, yeah, he didn't need to go there, and Sweetie knows that. He wanted to get his gun. She's not there because she needs weed. She's there because she wants to ditch the gun. Yeah. So I think that the joke is that, like, she could get it anywhere. But I also know people that are in states where it's legal, and they still get it through the gray market connect because...
That's crazy.
There's a little bit of outlaw to them. They want to save a couple bucks on taxes. I don't know why, because I think
that's
it's insane,
crazy.
Too. But... I mean, if you could argue that in Ohio, it's cheaper to still buy on the black market because the fucking
expensive
supply
here.
And taxes are so fucked up, even though we're neighbors with Michigan, the promised land. I don't know. But I didn't think that that's the hold that he has on her, especially since she's smoking a split the very next scene.
All right. The cops go to the parking garage and find the front bumper of Dell's car smashed on the right side, which is the opposite one, she said. They take paint samples, and Raylan decides to stake out the car while they talk about Clement. He apparently got off a quadruple murder charge on a technicality, and Sandy drives away in Dell's car, and they follow.
Did you know? I put this in mind. Did you notice? And we're both watching this on Hulu, correct? Some of the commercial cuts are brutal.
Dude, there's one when Willa is walking later in this episode under a bridge that I'm like, was that a commercial or did my shit just break? Like,
I feel like they cut 2 or 3 seconds of the closing scene and some of these. It's pretty bad. It's really, I heard that in some discussions, people are talking about that these episodes were particularly just loaded with commercials.
Probably
because they had this double feature and they're padding it out to probably 2.5-3 hours. But like, boy, we didn't see any commercials on Hulu, but like the cuts are still there, and some of them were just it's got to be something in the Hulu ingestion system, because they were just bloody stumps. They weren't cuts. They were vicious hacks.
They were the kind of vicious hack that Tuco Salamanca might leave you with. Did you recognize the name of the prosecutor, or the arresting cop who arrested Clement? He says it's Raymond Cruz.
Oh my God, you're right. I actually wrote that down in my notes, and it didn't actually...
If you don't know what I'm talking about, Raymond Cruz is the actor who plays Tuco in Breaking Bad. I was like, wait, surely you could have picked
a
different name.
He's the guy with the grill that screams tight, tight, tight.
Uh-huh.
Wow. So there's a lot of like they're having fun naming people based on other famous, like, broadly speaking, cops and criminal shows.
Seems like it. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet if we pay attention, there'll be more.
It'd be hilarious if that was just his name in the book and
right.
They just carried it over.
Would be really funny if we actually meet this guy later and it's actually Raymond Cruz.
I was hoping.
Because he's old enough that I think he's in his 60s. Like, it would be plausible that he would be a retired, hard charging cop.
Yeah, potentially. He was born
but
in
that's
61,
what you got Raymond Cruz
so
as Raymond Cruz. Like, what the hell? No, that's not what they're doing.
I did wonder,
like, why would they we are going to meet Raymond Cruz before the end of this series, though, correct? Why would you establish his character and kind of like build up a semi-mythical status around him if you're not gonna
He's this guy who just, he liked to do good cop work, couldn't handle how it was going, and quit, probably off fishing. We'll talk to him.
Yeah. We got another check. We got Chekhov's Ray now.
Mm-hmm.
Chekhov's Raymond.
So Sandy drives to a bridge, and Carolyn Wilder, with the cops following, Carolyn Wilder calls Raylan, asks him to meet with him with her ASAP. And then Sandy goes out to the bridge to throw Clement's gun over, but decides not to, and they continue to follow her.
Why?
I wonder if this is not an insurance policy.
That's what I was thinking too.
Hold on to this gun that she knows has probably killed a lot of people, that could match ballistics, that has his fingerprints on it. Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking like insurance, like fucking put Clem in the ground. But you're right. It's also I mean, that would burn Clem forever.
Yeah.
The kind
like
that's
directly connect him evidentiarily.
Yeah, there's like 9 rounds came out of this gun in that judge's chest.
Uh-huh.
That probably has his fingerprints all over it. Yeah, that'd be... Hell, it might even connect back to that quadruple murder.
Because he
like, this
takes
might
that
be...
gun out of the ceiling. This is his gun that he uses to kill, right?
There might be a lot of bodies on this gun, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right, well, I'm glad we're lined up on that.
And then we go back to Willa, who's in the hotel room. She gets bored and decides to go for a walk. And she's approached by a street vendor selling Rolexes for $40. She talks him down to 7 and continues walking.
I mean, this is a Raylan. Her shaking down this guy is totally, you know, Raylan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, asking about the legalities and just asking questions and getting this guy flustered. And she's walking off with the $7 Folex. But...
And they cost him nothing because he stole them, obviously. So why not sell one for $7?
And she's just doing this to fuck her. I mean, this is just to entertain herself. Like, I don't think she's getting this to present her dad as a gift. I thought that, but like, I don't know. Maybe that'll happen.
This is the stuff that makes me think she's a little bit of a... She's got a... kind of wild bad girl streak to her, because the parts of the city she's walking around in are not places I would typically go, like abandoned warehouses. What, really? That's where you're going? Under dark bridges and shit? Like,
it's cool and it doesn't cost a thing. He goes,
true.
you go to the upscale parts of it'll cost money just to be. Just to hang around, you know? But you can walk around abandoned shit. Plus, it's also felt like this is the kind of shit that that Raylan would get up to in Harlan. He'd probably go through abandoned grain silos and coal mines.
Dangerous.
And, yeah, the places where people aren't around, so you can get up to no good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Raylan's daughter. Sandy goes to Sweetie's bar where she hides the gun in the drop ceiling. Her shoe breaks and her foot gets soaked in the toilet. And Sweetie wonders what she was up to in the bathroom. And when she walks back outside, I think the cops notice a broken shoe. Doesn't really amount to anything here.
Yeah, I wonder what the significant... That's going to be significant, though, right? Like, why would you throw...
Yeah.
It's funny. She becomes a literal shit heel.
Jesus.
But yeah, like, why... Or is it just kind of like you're supposed to feel sorry for this girl? Because I did, like, how pathetic. She's doing this thing. She's breaking. She's just shut... And then this is, like... legendarily filthy bar. This is right up there with Patty's.
Okay.
Charlie hasn't mopped this place out for a couple days, and she's putting her foot in that. It just felt like, oh my god, the degradation she's going through for this man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see where that gun shows up next.
And you can see Sweetie knows what's up too.
I have a feeling Sweetie is gonna be the new owner of that gun. And what he does with it, I think, is the big question. I don't think it's going to be there if she goes back for it.
Yeah, one of the arcs I'm looking at for is like Sweetie and Carolyn and maybe Sandy getting together independently thinking that Clem's got to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then either working at cross purposes to do that or throwing in together.
Yeah, could be. But that gun would be a valuable piece.
True.
Raylan goes to see Carolyn Wilder. Clement is also in her office, and he talks a lot, drops some implied threats on Raylan, and then Carolyn tells him, look, you either got to arrest my client or back the hell off. And Raylan gets a call from Willa, kind of steps outside to take it, but notices Clement being pretty aggressive with Carolyn in the other room. And before he leaves, Raylan goes back in her office and asks if she's good, and she kind of just brushes him off. Because there's more going on here than we know at the moment.
Yeah, Raylan has a bit of a terrible poker face. Because when, you know, Clem is just trying to, like, flail around, find something to insult him about the cowboy hat. Like, Raylan doesn't give a shit because he's not insecure about that. But when he nails him, like, you know, there's only 2 kinds of cops I know. The ones that are passed over for the big chair because they suck. Or the ones that love it so much they have to be dragged off. Like, and the implied threat, that actually got to Raylan. Because... That is Raylan. He can't. He's the latter category for sure.
Yeah, he's going to be out there. And then the idea that, you know, those cops aren't dragged off typically while they're still breathing.
Right.
Yeah, there's definitely implied threat there.
So Willa goes to an abandoned factory. Raylan calls her and tells her to get the hell back to the hotel before he gets there. But first, he's going to go talk to Sandy. And in that factory, Willa finds a Cadillac insignia, which I guess that makes sense, right?
Sure.
I mean, there's a Cadillac thing going on here. There's two of them in the show. Judge Guy really loves them, and she finds a symbol here.
Well, this is a Pontiac.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, the like Arrowhead. Well, never mind. And this is like, we got Chekhov's cassettes, a Chekhov's gun, literally. Now we got Chekhov's Pontiac Cadillac. Arrowhead, because this is going to get stabbed into some motherfucker.
Yeah.
Sometime between now and episode 10. I would put a month's pay on that.
It's pretty pointy.
Yeah, pretty pointy. Yeah, pretty pointy.
All right, Raylan and Wendell go to Sandy's casino to ask her some questions. It's not her casino, it's where she works. Raylan tells her some details about the killing she probably didn't know, planting some seeds of worry in her mind, I think. And then they leave, and Sandy calls Clem, Raylan, Wendell head to Sweetie's.
Yeah, I like that scene where, you know, he's trying to do what he always tries to do, try to level with people about, like, you might think this person's this, but they're actually this. I think she knows more. Like, this is stuff she's realizing herself. But that line where it's like, I smoke marijuana for stress. He's like, well, you better get your hands on some really good shit to rate the way things are going.
Good stuff. Yeah, yeah, the show is full of really good dialogue still. They haven't lost a beat with that. Then Clint manages to get Raylan's hotel room number and calls up, and Willa arrives just in time to answer. And I think what happens here is Clem's like, your father called me to come babysit you or whatever, and she buys it.
What is the significance of showing Willa's phone at 3%? Is this like is this Chekhov's battery gauge where it shows sure. that she there's like it's, first of all, there's a meme about the internet that's like, why is it every time a girl takes a screenshot of their phone that her battery's at critical red? Like maybe they're not stereotypically as diligent about, I don't know, charging batteries like men are. But like, is okay. this just showing that she's kind of careless about it? Because it's middle of the day, she's plugging this shit in. And that's going to be significant later on, because I don't know why they wanted us to make sure that midday she's bingo on battery.
I don't know why the battery is so low. I don't think it amounts to anything because it's charging the entire time that they're down in the restaurant, and then
not on this episode, but it's going to be like the fact that she doesn't later, charge her. Yeah.
Yeah, they could be setting it up for like, hey, this girl does not pay attention to her battery life.
Right.
And but it's here, like, it doesn't really matter.
Raylan's going to get kidnapped, and Raylan's going to try to track her, and her phone's dead. Something like that. It's, it's going to pay off somehow, I think.
So over at Sweetie's, Wendell tells Raylan all about Sweetie's musical and criminal career. And they ask Sweetie about Sandy. He says, she was probably looking to toss a gun, and proceeds to display his variety of very legal, very registered firearms. Carolyn arrives to protect her client, tells them to get a search warrant if they want to do any more questions or snooping. And when the cops leave, Carolyn and Sweetie talk about Clem being back. He's apparently blackmailing Carolyn into working as his lawyer with what he knows about Sweetie. And this is all, this is making me think, okay, why does Carolyn care so much about Sweetie? What is the connection here? Which we just don't know yet.
Yeah, it's big, big history. Mm-hmm. Going back a long ways. Do you recognize the song, George Clinton's
No.
Atomic Dog?
I am not a funk fan, I gotta say.
It's Snoop Dogg sampled on a What's My Name. It's the one that goes bow wow wow yippee yo yippee yay bow wow, you know that one?
Okay, I'm familiar with that, yeah.
Yeah, as soon as you get to the main hook, it's instantly recognizable because of the Snoop Dogg of everything.
Totally.
But
he could have been on that album. Oh my god. Or even that track.
A whole other life if he hadn't been busted. What the hell is a Z? Is that a benzo?
I don't know.
But like I like that they really made a meal of the scene, but I love that Sweetie's like, it's always good to see a guy who knows his right shine on a police officer, like him parading those three pieces around. It's like, if you're not here about one of these legally owned and registered pieces, then I'm gonna have to call my lawyer.
I think it's a little it's a little iffy for this guy to be reaching under the counter to grab an implied gun. There's a certain amount of danger there. He could have started maybe with the one that's behind the bar and kind of up in their side of their line of sight.
Yeah, sure. I don't know that. That seems like a pretty devil may care attitude if you are handling guns like that around police officers. But on the other hand, it's your fucking business establishment. You got a permit for them, all of them. Then
sure, no, you should be well within your rights to do it. But
yeah,
and
Wendell
kind of knows
do?
This guy, right? So they have a relationship of some kind.
Yeah, that's true. That also makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, so he's probably not that worried about it. We get to know a little bit about Apophis, which is the serpent god of chaos, that's how he's describing Clem.
Yeah, the guy who just wants to kill the light. He's a Joker type. He just wants to watch the world burn.
Seems like it.
I also like how Carolyn comes back with, like, well, as far as I know, Clem's been in town for a couple days and the sun's still rising. So the immortal words of Ra, fuck him. It's great.
Raylan calls Willa, but she doesn't answer her phone. And so when he gets back to the hotel, he finds her phone sitting there and a note next to it, presumably saying, hey, I'm down in the dining room. So he goes down there, finds Willa with Clem, and Clem is acting... he's acting all coy, like he's a buddy of Raylan's, and everybody knows the game except for Willa here. And then he gets vaguely threatening with Raylan and his daughter specifically, and Raylan snatches him up, tosses him out the front door, beats his ass, beats his face, tells him that he'll kill him the next time if he ever sees him with his daughter again. Yeah.
The way Raylan's face changed when he put his arm around Willa was like a great classic moment. And it's one of those things where, like, again, I think this is Raylan being stupid, because the way I interpret this is he's got Clem on an open and shut case of, like, menacing, you know, like, this is highly inappropriate. And instead of, like, just busting him on they got a lot more evidence now. They got his, instead of just, like, busting him then and there for that, he gets goaded into a fight. And now, like, I feel like he's lets Clem go because he knows that the vicious beating he just gave him would make anything that he tries to do not stick. But
yeah,
Raylan
for
did
sure.
that. And maybe Clem's smart enough to know that, like, you know, because, like, you got to think that Carolyn's told him about Raylan, because she knows about Raylan because she did a bunch of research on these six cases and his, like, overzealous police work. And he's so smart. I wonder if he knew if I go over there and fuck with him, he's going to start swinging on me. And on the day that his lawyer warned him to stay away from me, this is going to back him the fuck off.
Yeah, could be. Or put him in legal hot water himself, right? Turn it around on him that way.
Yeah.
Because he definitely got in legal hot water from time to time and Justified.
Oh, for sure.
Especially in the later parts of Justified. So.
But Clem's also out of his mind if he thinks this is going to back Raylan anywhere off.
Right. Right.
And, like, also, like, I hate to tell the bad guys, the worst thing that can happen to you is Raylan losing his badge. Because then he's just going to kill you. And he'll probably go to jail, but he won't, like, yeah, once Raylan loses his badge, then he gets really scary.
Yeah. Regardless of what Carolyn has told him about Raylan, I still think this is another case of him stepping into a situation he doesn't quite understand.
Oh, for sure. He's underestimating
the fuck.
He
does not
get
Raylan. Yeah.
Yeah.
He thinks he's just another chump, right? That he can bully and manipulate and coerce and get one over on.
No, he's super arrogant.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out for him.
Why do you think Willa cries?
Yeah, Willa sees him beat Clem and starts crying. That was a question I had. Is she sorry for not listening and getting into a situation that could have been very bad for all of them? Or perhaps she's scared of watching her father beat somebody so viciously?
I think the way she took the shotgun blast in the first episode in stride, like completely unfazed, makes me think the latter theory is not, like, the fact that she's traumatized by seeing Raylan do violence. Yeah, I think it's the former, that like, oh my god, I was fucking around with my dad and not picking up the signals and thinking I was the coolest person in the room, and now this has happened. It's because, and I could have died. This is my fault. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, I was living the carefree 15-year-old civilian life when I should have been listening to my dad and living the constantly in hot water cop life.
I did love the shot where they like glued a GoPro to the inside of the revolving door so that you got Raylan shoving the guy's face in from the door's perspective as it spins around. That's whoever came up with that shot, great fucking idea. Because I imagine it's cheap to pull off, and it was really arresting.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know where we go from here. That's the end of the episode. I'm curious to see if there will be some repercussions for beating Clem in the street here. There was no one around to see it, but who knows?
There certainly will. And we saw the Raylan was kind of looking. I think that you're going to see some CCTV. That swanky hotel's got some cameras. And
you would think so. Detroit in general is probably just...
And again, I think Raylan has him dead to rights and a lot of hot water, but him beating... And not just he went really far with it, too. Mm-hmm. He beat the piss out of Clem. That's just not going to... With his history, that's just not going to play.
Yeah.
Well, I will solicit some feedback. We did get a smattering, but since this is a surprise double episode, we're not going to have time to record it today because we got to get off to Oppenheimer. We are collecting feedback, justified@baldmove.com. I did get a smattering, so we'll have some to next week for sure. If you'd like to give our thoughts on these two episodes, justified@baldmove.com. Very excited to be back. Thrilled at the way things are going so far. 8 more episodes. See how many of these checkoffs, various nouns, actually go off before episode 10. But thanks for listening with us. You can follow along with everything we do at your favorite social media. We're on almost all of them, @BaldMove, except for TikTok. We're Baldest Move there. And if you'd like to support what we're doing, if you've been through us for a couple seasons, been listening for a few years, and you want to get ad-free feeds and a bunch more content that we keep gated behind the club, join the club at support.baldmove.com. We could use your support. That'll do it. Justified@baldmove.com for feedback. We'll see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.